I'd heard you'd found an ark. We found a torso.
The Thames torso mysteries. The women were never identified.
How did she die?
She was poisoned. If you want to find the other body parts, you're going to have to check the riverbank from Richmond to Whitechapel.
It's her left foot.
This belongs to another girl.
Whitechapel. Some bugs are examined under a microscope. A sinister figure lurches towards a woman on a bed. Rupert Penry-Jones. A cleaver covered in blood. An extract from the book The Marquis de Sade. Phil Davis. A woman in a pink dress clutches her stomach. Some phials of different coloured liquids. Steve Pemberton. At the mortuary, Llewellyn stands beside a metal table where the body parts have been arranged in their natural order. Chandler and Miles watch her from behind a glass wall.
I'm afraid this is everything we've managed to recover from the river in the last 7 days.
River police reckon that anything we haven't found by now, we won't find. It'd be out at sea.
Oh, we will work with what we have. The cuts to the second victim were made with the same weapon, and I've identified the same toxin in the limbs. I wasn't able to identify the poison using standard tests. This is unlike anything I've ever come across. So I decided to take the different approach and look at incredibly rare poisons I was unfamiliar with.
You found it?
Cantharidin.
The word cantharidin handwritten on paper. A flash of a brunette girl in a pink dress clutching her stomach. Chandler writes the name Maud on the incident board.
Cantharidin, or Spanish fly, has been regarded as an aphrodisiac for centuries. It is, in fact, a highly toxic poison. Ed, tell us what you found.
1772. Two prostitutes were given aniseed balls laced with Spanish fly. They spent a week in agony and nearly died. The man who poisoned them was sentenced to have his head cut off, his body burned, and his ashes scattered. That man was the Marquis de Sade.
This is important. He wanted to excite their desires. He wanted them to participate in an orgy.
And he didn't act alone. His manservant procured the girls and took part in the orgies.
A couple, administering a lethal aphrodisiac to satisfy their desires.
Okay.
Miles dozes in a chair.
Miles.
He wakes with a jolt and follows Chandler to his office doorway.
I want you to have a really strong coffee.
I prefer tea.
I prefer you awake.
Look, the baby's getting much better. She slept for 4 hours.
Well, 4 hours clearly isn't enough. I want you sharp.
There's nothing wrong with my game.
Gotta have a word.
What's the matter?
Mansell collars Riley.
I know where to buy a Spanish fly.
Okay, why am I not surprised?
I didn't realise it was a poison.
Buckham passes by.
I've given it to Eva.
Oh, my God.
Makes you feel all warm inside, you know. I was trying to spice things up a bit. Didn't kill her.
Well, you've got to tell the boss.
Well, you tell him. If I tell him, he'll look at me like I'm a pervert.
Oh, and if I tell him?
Kent is in Chandler's office.
Sir. It's come to my attention that there is a place in Whitechapel where you can buy Spanish fly.
Kent looks down timidly. Chandler raises an eyebrow. On the street by day.
What's wrong with coffee?
I like this better than coffee. Right, what are we waiting for?
Chandler follows Miles into a private shop where they loiter awkwardly beside a rack of black rubber gas masks. They both look a little perplexed, then proceed along the racks of fetish gear beneath overhead lamps with purple shades. Chandler watches a bald-headed man browsing the stock. Miles reaches for a little bottle of Spanish fly in a glass display case.
Found it. This is what we're looking for.
Everyone thinks we're a couple.
Well, they're used to wording that in here.
No ingredients listed. Let's get it analysed, see if it's the source of our cantharidin.
They head for the till, manned by a guy with an eyebrow ring.
Is this real Spanish fly?
It's 100% genuine, satisfaction guaranteed.
Has anyone been in recently ordering large amounts?
Everyone buys it. Young, old. Enjoy.
Oh, no, it's not for me. Or him. It's a... Oh, never mind.
The guy smirks as they leave. They arrive at the mortuary.
Ah, there you are. Well, it might season your paella.
Is that a euphemism?
No, I mean it literally. It's cayenne pepper.
What, is that it?
Yes. It might create a sensation of warmth, but it's not an aphrodisiac. I've had to look at all the commercial preparations claiming to be Spanish fly, and truth is, not one of them contain cantharidin.
Chandler enters the dingy police archive. Buchan scurries past.
Ah, hello. Didn't hear you come in.
How's it going?
Oh, I've made a good start on US crime, and I'm now tackling Europe.
You won't have room.
Ah, about that. I was hoping we could knock through. I noticed there's a usable space on the other side of this wall.
That's the ladies. Look, I need to know how the Marquis de Sade obtained his cantharidin.
Well, I suppose he would have bought it from an apothecary. It was even sold in some spice markets in Morocco to be added to tagines, but, well, anyone can make it. If you have some blister beetles.
A flash of the blister beetles. Nora joins Kent in Chandler's office.
One second. The Tour have been importing medicinal herbs and spices for 200 years. They specialise in Chinese remedies and obscure medicines.
Like cantharidin?
Well, they supply it to pharmaceutical firms who use it to manufacture wart treatments.
So far, so legal.
Well, there's more. The Tour is run by Travis Underwood and one employee, a woman named Heather Green.
Travis Underwood, married to Mary for 25 years, two adult children. Mary has a long-term illness and is registered disabled.
Heather Green is the intriguing one. She's worked with Underwood for 3 years. She has a master's in anthropology. Now, at the end of her master's, she published this paper in an esteemed journal. This is her study into the use of aphrodisiacs in tribal medicine by indigenous tribes in the Amazon. She was particularly taken by a love potion called Catawaba, and she tried it herself.
Excellent work. This could be our couple.
In a vast warehouse...
May I ask what this is about?
We'd like to speak to yourself, Mr. Underwood, regarding the sale of blister beetles.
Is there a problem?
There might be.
Just the two of you that run this place?
That's right.
Must be intense, two people working together all day long.
What are you implying?
Do you have more than a working relationship with your boss?
You two spend all your time together, don't you? Long shifts. I bet you spend more time with each other than you do with your families. Are you romantically involved?
He's not my type.
Nor is Travis mine.
They follow the haughty but glamorous Heather Green through the warehouse. A distinguished-looking man offers his hand.
Gentlemen. Travis Underwood.
D.I. Chandler.
D.S. Miles.
I understand you're interested in our beetles.
Cantharidin, yes.
Well, the trade is tightly controlled and regulated.
Litter vesicatoria.
Oh, strong odour, unmistakable.
Smells like mice.
Quite. You mustn't touch them. They're highly irritant, even like this. They'll cause blistering.
They're a powerful aphrodisiac, aren't they? Sought after for hundreds of years.
It's not an aphrodisiac. That's a fallacy. It's an extremely unpleasant poison.
Somebody would have to be very ignorant to try to use it in that way. Excuse me.
Only a few months ago, we had an inquiry from a couple who thought cantharidin was a love potion.
They came here?
No. We take our security protocol very seriously. The only way to become a client is to contact us by letter and have the correct permits and documentation. The first letter we received was from the woman, and we politely declined.
There was a second letter?
From the man, and that one was scary.
Miles watches her rear as she climbs some steps to retrieve a file.
Two letters, one address. First letter, from Celeste King, is reasonable. Second letter, Max, is very angry. He was furious we denied his wife and demanded in very strong terms to know how he could acquire the live beetles.
A couple desperate to obtain cantharidin and willing to make violent threats to do so.
We need to take a closer look at Celeste and Max.
Flashes of the blister beetles, an illustration of a naked woman with a scar for a head. Somebody carries the brunette in a pink dress, slumped forward, cold. Body parts are wrapped in plastic.
The two letters asking about cantharidin sent to the Tour, the names are false.
Oh, no big surprise there.
Same fake address on both turns out to be a big house converted into flats where all the post is dumped in the hallway and it's easy to gain access.
A dead letter drop.
So nothing to go on, I'm afraid.
Wait a minute. At first glance, this letter from Celeste, it's beautifully written, suggests an educated woman of a certain age. This letter from Max is misspelt and chaotic and suggests someone who didn't finish school, probably institutionalised and is of low intelligence.
Well, she's the brains, he's the ball.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I think they're the same person.
They look closer at the handwritten letters.
No.
No, he's right. Look closely, ignore the differences and focus on the similarities. The height ratio and spacing are the same.
You took the course too?
I did, 2010.
Oh, 2008.
Well, if the same person wrote these letters, are we looking for a burly woman or a girly bloke?
Flashes of a woman donning heels. A blood-covered cleaver is brought down. A body part wrapped in plastic washes up on shore. Chandler and Miles arrive at the mortuary.
This is our third girl. Found this morning in the Thames at the Dartford Crossing. But she has something to tell us.
She shines an ultraviolet light on the girl's arm.
A nightclub?
The stamp is still vivid. I think this gives us a good idea of her last movements.
Chandler returns to the police station with a photo of the girl's arm. He heads over to Riley's desk as staff bustle back and forth.
Hey, you find out which club uses this stamp?
Yes, sir. Come on, club crawl.
Club crawl?
Yeah, get your dancing shoes on.
Like the sound of that.
Mansell grabs his coat and follows Riley out the door. Bit by bit, the main office empties and the lights go down. Chandler stands before the incident board with an eyebrow raised.
She would have felt that she was burning to death from the inside.
I'm afraid they never found that.
All the teams remember she was a real person and really cared about.
This is unlike anything I've ever come across.
Nora arrives.
I thought we should eat.
Chandler smiles bashfully. They unbox some sushi either side of Chandler's desk. Both of them unclick their chopsticks and position them almost ritualistically at the top of their boxes. At the same time and with the same controlled manner, they unscrew their little bottles of soy sauce.
How come you don't go home after your shift?
Because of them, the dead girls. I can't go home and switch the TV on. Not when there's three victims out there, no name, no identity. Doesn't feel right.
Are you always this invested in your cases?
The dead always get my full attention. It's the living that I struggle with.
What, no wife, no kids?
No. No prospect of them either. It's hard to meet someone who understands the demands of the job.
Definitely. It's easy to see why police always fall for police.
Chandler double takes, then they both pop a roll of sushi into their mouths and eat. The sun rises over the grimy London skyline. The Thames washes up onto the dirty beach running through the city. Nora, Chandler and Miles head into the archive, where Buchan is arranging files on shelves.
I would invite you to sit down, only I've had to dispense with the luxury of chairs on account of the shortage of space. An issue I have already raised.
Split personalities.
Dissociative identity disorder. That is very rare.
Over here. 1999, Knoxville, Tennessee. Thomas Husky. A recent addition to our crime family. Husky claimed he had a separate, darker personality called Kyle, who was responsible for a series of murders. The defense argued that Kyle was to blame and that Thomas was innocent.
But Thomas wasn't aware of what Kyle was doing?
It's possible. The personalities, I think they call them alters, are formed to protect the person from traumatic memories. It starts in childhood where there is abuse and then every time something terrible happens, another alter forms to take hold of the memory and keep it from them.
You're telling me a person can be a murderer and not know it?
Yes, if the alters are hiding it from them. In a way, the brain is keeping secrets from itself.
At the incident board?
I don't think the killer's pretending to be Celeste or Max. He's someone who has them as distinct personalities. Alter egos. John Doe suffered a traumatic event, so Celeste stepped in to protect him from those memories. Celeste is the poisoner. Max is the hard man. He chops up the bodies, wraps them in bin bags, dumps them in the Thames. John Doe has no memory or knowledge of Celeste and Max.
Well, that's what he wants us to think.
It's a real psychiatric condition.
Not everybody thinks so.
It's a great defense, is what it is. How can you be found guilty of murder if technically you're not responsible because your alter ego did it? It's a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah, well, let's let the lawyers worry about that.
The hooded crow. You found it?
Yep, and it's not usual five shots from firing ladies go free kind of place either. It's an underground club, and it's definitely not for the shy of the faint-hearted.
At the mortuary.
Strangest thing. Felt like I was having deja vu.
Well, the victims are similar.
Oh, more than that. These three girls are very, very alike. Musculature and muscle attachment indicate the same build. Axillary hair suggests the same dark hair colour. I can only estimate the height, but I'm willing to guess it's the same as the others. To the untutored eye, these three girls' body parts would have been interchangeable, like parts of a doll. Our killer definitely has a type.
If only we knew what she looked like.
Well, only the heads can tell us that.
Was she poisoned?
I'm afraid so. Our killer likes one type of girl, one type of murder.
Are you grinding your teeth?
Yes, these damn caffeine tablets.
How many of them are you taking?
Well, boxes or pills?
Dry mouth, palpitations, blurred vision, irritability, upset stomach. Does it sound familiar?
I'm always irritable.
You're poisoning yourself.
You can't take them anymore.
Llewellyn bins them.
How am I going to stay awake?
In the dark and dingy archive, Buchan stacks up piles of boxes. One particularly big pile causes him to fall over. Chandler's at the incident board addressing the team.
Right, we know the killer has a type he likes. 5'4", 8.5 stone, early 20s, dark hair. Now, the last victim may have met him in a club called the Hooded Crow. The killer could have approached other girls who fit this profile. If so, they may remember him.
This club's been going for years. It's a dive, and the crowd are pretty edgy, so you'll have to dress up, but don't try too hard.
I'll borrow Judy's boob tube.
I think you should sit this one out.
Well, you don't think I can cut it in a club anymore?
No, just go home, get an early night.
I'm not letting the team down. I can do my job.
I'm not asking. It's an order. Go home.
Mars is left open-mouthed and frowning as Chandler heads off. In a black wig with a severe fringe, Noroi struts towards the Hooded Crow in a dank brick alleyway. In line with the others, Chandler spots her coming.
You look so different.
I used to work in Vice. Don't be fooled, though. I can still snap a man's wrist in seconds.
After you.
You all right?
Yeah,
all right.
We're here to work, remember?
I'll try.
Mars returns home and finds the hallway strewn with bits of furniture. He looks up at the ceiling where the argument is coming from. Miles slopes into the living room and finds the floor covered with toys and games and other babies' paraphernalia. He scans around, then takes a deep breath. He frowns and his shoulders droop. The overhead strip lights at the Hooded Crow nightclub cast a purple glow around the busy cavernous interior. The clientele have a punkish quality. Noroi dances amongst them. Mansell watches the girls. He subtly removes his wedding ring. Chandler approaches two of the girls.
I wonder if I can ask you a few questions about whether you've been to this nightclub before, and when you did come here. I was just wondering if you could tell me if whether or not anyone had been...
The girls walk away, leaving Chandler flummoxed. Miles enters the empty police station. He pulls up a chair and parks his feet on top of it. He lies back in the armchair in Chandler's office and shuts his eyes to sleep. At the nightclub, Riley and Mansell drink beers together.
Do you know who you remind me of?
My mum says I look a little bit like Matt Damon.
Nah, I was thinking Ted Bundy.
I'm a serial killer.
Yeah, but you're acting like a psychopath. You're scanning the room for the weak, the drunk, the lonely and the vulnerable.
Buchan stands before the incident board at the police station staring at the photos. Mars emerges from Chandler's office.
What time is it? 2 a.m. What are you doing? I'm working late.
As are you.
You don't need to be here. I've run out of space in the archive. I can't breathe down there.
It's still not finished.
You want to be careful down there, or you won't see the wood for the trees.
Miles goes, leaving Buchan on his own. He returns his attention to the incident board. Chandler passes Nora at the nightclub. She's chatting to someone and having a drink. Mansell is with a sozzled-looking woman.
I can come round and see you later on with my cuffs if you like. You'd like that, wouldn't you? Yeah, you're total cheeky, you are.
At the bar, a young man gestures at Mansell, alerting a burly-looking guy with tattoos, who heads over and grabs hold of Mansell.
Mate, that's my girl.
It's all right, mate. I was only having a laugh. Mind you, she did give me a number.
Well, you better give me your phone.
Don't touch my phone. Back off, mate.
The burly guy punches Mansell, who recovers and gets him in an arm lock. The rest of the team break up the fight.
Don't
move.
Look at me. You listening?
Give me one good reason why I should keep you on the team.
Come on, give me one good reason! Because I'm a dickhead who can't appreciate what he's got until it's gone.
Is that what you said to Eva?
Yeah. But you're more forgiving than she is.
Oh, no.
Last chance. Don't make me regret it.
Thank you.
Bloody idiot.
What's my bad ear? Well... Where's Nora? I can't see her.
She was just through here, right?
Excuse me.
She's talking to a blonde guy. Good looking. Blue shirt.
Can't see him.
Can't see him either.
Find him.
I'll check the loos.
Excuse me.
They split up around the club. Noroi is outside. She looks dazed, walking along a deserted street in the arms of the good-looking 20-something blonde guy. They head down the middle of the road beneath the rain street. The team leave the nightclub.
Yeah, this is D.I. Chandler. I want you to track the location of D.I. Noroi's phone.
The blonde guy has his arm around Noroi.
Scully Street. This way. Scully Street. Come on.
The team set off on foot.
Stabbing Street! Stabbing Street!
The blonde guy lies Nora down on the bed.
I'm pretty sure. Well, where is it?
At the end.
Nora is in a glossy pink mini dress.
Oh, come on, come on. Stand
here.
Let's get in.
No.
The smirking guy fondles Nora.
Nora
appears to be out cold. The blonde guy's about to kiss her.
Please!
The blonde guy appears smiling. Chandler pushes him up against the wall.
Where is she? Tiger! What have you done to her? Come on, where is she?
The team rush past. Kent finds the bedroom.
Mansell!
Conscious.
Oh, Jesus. Mina.
It's police officer down.
Darling.
28 Cosmos.
Sir! Can you hear me?
Sir, we found her! No, she's passed out. Either drugged or poisoned.
Listen, it's gonna be all right.
Just get here, will ya?
And then we'll get on the way. Just hang in there.
Later, Noroi comes too. She reaches out her hand towards Chandler.
Joe.
He fumbles her hand and lets it go, then rubs his own together.
I like you.
I like you too.
Her eyes remain closed. The paramedics arrive.
Can I get in there, Chris?
Thank you.
Hi, can you open your eyes for me? Open your eyes. What's your name?
She's police. Look after her.
Downstairs in the modern but austere-looking living room, Kent sorts through some keys in little jars on a long coffee table. Mansell puts on a pair of plastic gloves. Some forensics officers in plastic coveralls are also there. Riley's in the bathroom with Chandler. Chandler sorts through a cabinet by the sink. He empties some blue pills into his hand.
Look at this. They're not aspirin, you can tell by the markings.
What is it?
Rehypnol.
Well, why would a good-looking boy like him need roofies to bring a girl home?
Because of what he wants to do with them.
Sir! You got to see this. Look what I found.
On the computer screen.
It's a hidden camera. He's got a whole load of these movies.
That's us coming in.
Back at the police station.
Sleep well?
Only one who did last night.
This is from Nelson's computer.
Star tattoo.
Victim number one.
This could be our Agnes.
The videos show the blonde guy Nelson lying on top of an unconscious woman. In interview.
We know what you did last night.
Really? Someone you don't know who drugged your detective. When I met her, she appeared willing and compliant. She wanted to party, and I had no problem with that. I did not coerce or force her to accompany me. The fact that I have Rohypnol in my home is coincidental, as it is an old prescription obtained abroad to help me sleep when I travel.
And what about the girls on the computer, the recordings?
I can see that you are excited by what you've found. But did you actually look at the films closely? Do those girls look distressed? Do they look unhappy? More to the point, did a single one of them report a rape?
How can they when they don't remember it?
There is no rape. You can see they're not even undressed.
This girl's dead.
A photo.
No, she isn't.
We have her body.
Well, she was fine when I said goodbye to her. I had nothing to do with her dying.
Tell us her name, then.
Nelson, who wears black eyeliner, looks at his lawyer, who nods once.
Lucy Hooper.
Mars and Chandler straighten.
I don't kill them.
Boss, found Lucy Hooper. They're bringing her in now.
Thanks.
Chandler finds Norroy in his office.
You didn't need to come back so soon.
I slept it off. I'm fine.
I take full responsibility for Mansell's behaviour. We should never have lost you.
I don't blame Mansell. I blame Miles.
Well, but Miles wasn't even there.
Exactly. He should have been. We went out a man down because he was too tired to fulfil his duties as sergeant.
He's got a new baby.
I made a choice, as you did, to put this job first. We don't have families providing us with excuses to go home early or take extra time off. If his family means he can't give you 100%, then a transfer to a less demanding post is appropriate.
Norroy walks smartly out of the office, passing Miles, who's chatting to Riley. Chandler watches them from his office door. Miles shows a young brunette a photograph of Nelson.
Lucy, can you tell me who this man is?
Yeah, it's Damon.
How did you meet him?
I met him in the Hood of Crow. He made me laugh. We had a few drinks, you know how it goes.
And you spent the night with him?
No, not like that. My drink got spiked and I felt ill, and Damon took me back to his and looked after me. Nothing happened.
Mars looks dubious.
He didn't rape me.
What happened to your neck?
Oh, Damon said I fell on his flowers. It's nothing.
Well, you fell on your neck?
Okay, rewind it.
Nelson looks up with blood on his lip.
Pause it.
Okay. Well, he's not a rapist. What is he?
Something stranger. I think he drugs the girls so that he can drink their blood.
A vampire?
Fetishist. He's not drinking pints. He's just making a small incision, you know, enough to make them bleed.
And what the hell do we charge him with?
Providing a noxious substance with intent to stupefy, kidnapping, and if we can prove that this is a sexual fetish, indecent assault.
Life imprisonment for kidnap, 15 years for the Rohypnol and 10 for the assault. That's a good result.
It would be a good result if Damon was a serial poisoner and a murderer of women, but he isn't. He's just a creep who knows exactly what he's doing. We're back to the beginning. We're nothing. Excuse me.
Miles marches off, leaving Norroy and Chandler sharing an awkward frown. Buckens amongst the shelves in the archive. Chandler comes in and scans around.
Ed?
I'm over here in Icelandic crime.
Congratulations on creating a fire hazard.
It's a valuable resource. Should there ever be herring-related crime, we're ready.
Look, will you just forget about completing your archive? Girls are dying right now.
I gave you the Thames Torso Mysteries.
You gave me an unsolved crime with unidentified victims. It hasn't been a lot of help. I'm missing something. The answer's in here somewhere. I need your input.
Very well. I'll look again.
A body wrapped in plastic washes up by a breakwater in the Thames. Chandler and Miles are with Llewellyn at the mortuary, standing around the dismembered torso laid out on a metal table.
This fourth girl. She like the others?
Very similar. Same victim profile, with one telling difference. The first victim showed high levels of cantharidin. The second was poisoned with significantly less. The third and fourth, less again.
Why would the poisoner lower the amount?
Running low on beetles.
Or they could have worked out that you could kill with a much lower dose. The dreadful thing is, less poison kills you more slowly. It would have taken longer and longer to die.
Maybe that's what the killer wants.
A flash of a brunette clutching her stomach. Somebody in gloves flips the pages of an old book, then raises a syringe. At the incident board, Chandler writes the name Elaine under victim four.
Go on then, educate me.
Elaine of Astolat.
The Lady of Shalott. Fell in love with Lancelot, died on the river.
Right, everyone, listen up. Four girls. Exactly the same as each other. Our killer has a definite type.
Hang on, boss. The missing girl who ran after the band, the goose chase.
Ella Beau?
Now, she fits the profile perfectly, doesn't she?
Everything about her.
Ella Beau could be just what we've been looking for all along, a victim with a name.
I hate to remind you, but there's no body. If she was a victim, she'd have washed up by now.
You can't trust the river. She's been missing for months, right?
Yeah, 6 months.
Well, there you go. She could have drifted out to sea without any of us knowing.
Highly unlikely.
We should track Ella's movements, find the last person to see her alive. That could be our killer.
What we should do is go public, make an appeal. Even if John Doe's condition's undiagnosed, walking around as Celeste and Max is bound to get him noticed.
If we go public, we'll be swamped with information and 99.9% of it will be a waste of our time.
And 0.1% will be the killer's name.
Well, with respect, I don't care what you think. I only care what he thinks.
I think he probably cares more for a DI's opinion than a sergeant's.
The rest of the team are shocked. Mansell and Riley watch closely as Norroy and Miles both turn to look at Chandler. He seems uncertain, with wide, roving eyes. He looks down at the floor.
Let's concentrate on finding out what happened to Ella. An appeal's the last resort only.
Miles eyeballs Norroy, who looks uncomfortable as she scans the team's faces. Riley smiles awkwardly at her desk. Norroy marches away towards the exit and takes her coat off the stand. Chandler follows her over.
It's nothing personal. I just thought Miles had the best idea, that's all.
Don't you get it? You weren't just choosing an idea.
She hurries out of the office.
Look, I didn't mean for you to lose a girl over this.
To be honest, I found the whole thing quite exhausting. I don't know how Mansell does it.
Chandler rejoins the team. In the archive, Buchan takes a box file marked Poisoner off a shelf. He opens the file and takes out a folder. Reading the contents, his eyes widen. In the main office, Miles heads for Riley's desk, where she's working with Kent.
What's this?
Well, Ella Beau left home to follow Bam, but the band split up. So what I've got here is how the band evolved since then. So, we start with the Devil's Architects, the singer leaves, and the rest of the band become the Buried Boys. The bassist is sacked and they become Broken Crypt. Now, they play two gigs and it's all over because the drummer walks out.
Mm. Only the lead guitarist survives.
Yeah, now he's interesting. He's pretty much the driving force behind it, the songwriter, the guy with the ideas, the talent, and he's pretty dishy. So if Ella was a fan of anyone, it will be him.
Doug Brenton.
Mm-hmm. Buchan strides into Chandler's office with the folder.
Arthur Ford, 1954. Arthur Ford fell in love with a woman who worked in his office on the Euston Road. His feelings were not reciprocated, and desperate to seduce her, he bought some coconut ice and laced it with cantharidin. He offered it to the woman, and she, along with a friend, ate it.
They died from his unrequited love.
In agony.
Well, that's why the doses are getting smaller. He's not trying to kill them, he wants them to fall in love with him. Every girl's the same because they're like the first perfect girl he lost.
Chandler looks at the photo of Ella.
What if Ella Beau is that perfect girl, one he's trying to replace?
If
you're right, then I've made a grave mistake.
Chandler looks up at Buchan, who frowns darkly.
That file was in the archive all along, right under my nose. I was so busy trying to know everything that I missed it.
Ed.
Girls have died.
He points outside.
Because of me.
Crawling bugs, a brunette clutches her stomach. Riley, Mars and Kent head for a rehearsal room.
Apparently they're a kind of folk rock electronica thing.
Explains why I've never heard of them.
A grimy-looking rocker opens the door.
We're looking for Doug Brenton.
Yeah, I'm Doug. What do you want?
Police. We're trying to trace a fan of yours, a girl called Ella Bowe.
Why'd you need to find her?
It's important we establish her last movements.
Well, that's easy. She was making the teas 5 minutes ago.
Ella!
A bleach blonde with piercings appears.
Oh, great. My mum sent the Jesus police to bring me home.
Well, she's alive, so there goes my victim theory.
She isn't a victim. She might be something more interesting.
What's that?
The trigger.
Miles shows Ella the photo her mum gave them.
You've changed a bit.
Yeah, well, that was a while ago. Lots happened since then.
Ella, we know the Devil's Architects have been through several incarnations. Were you the reason for any of their splits?
Me? No.
There's no other band members who were jealous of your relationship with Doug?
I'm not a Yoko.
Any other guys trying it on, asking you out?
Well, there's always going to be lads having a go. Especially after a few drinks.
No, I mean, like, really obsessed. Really crazy about you.
Nathan.
Tell us about him.
He was my boss at this chocolate shop I worked in. And we got on really well. And it was too late before I realized he was completely in love with me. Nathan had left an envelope out for me, and when I opened it, I saw it was an invitation to dinner. When I went to tell him that I wasn't interested, he'd prepared this huge meal with flowers and champagne and candles. I mean, I knew he liked me, but it was so full on, it was weird. When I told him I wasn't interested, he changed.
How did he change?
He wasn't Nathan anymore. He became someone else.
Nathan was in love with Ella, but she rejected him, and in response to that trauma, Celeste took over. She gave the next girl a love potion to make her fall for Nathan, but the love potion was cantharidin, and the girl died. So then another personality, Max, took over and disposed of the bodies. This cycle of seduction and death goes on and on while Nathan has no idea.
What if all the victims worked in this shop?
Could be, but you still can't kill four girls and not remember anything.
After you.
Nathan, the boss of the chocolate shop that Riley visited in the last episode, is at home. A young brunette woman sits down at the table in a pink dress. She scans around uncomfortably. Nathan's decked the old-fashioned-looking room with candles and prepared an expensive-looking dinner. Dressed in a suit and tie, he pours champagne, then toasts his companion and drinks. Chandler, Mars and Riley arrive outside the closed chocolate shop downstairs.
I'll get that.
There's no need. We're closed.
I'll tell them to go away.
Okay.
Anna?
Don't keep me waiting.
He proffers a sickly smile. Anna watches him with an uncertain look in her eye. In his old-fashioned kitchen, Nathan injects something into a little chocolate. Anna heads into the shop to answer the door.
Can I help you?
Police, can you open the door, please?
Where's Nathan? Where's your boss?
Oh, he's upstairs.
Has he given you anything to eat?
We're just having dinner.
She's eaten. Get her checked out.
What's going on?
Go with DCRO.
Chandler goes upstairs, startling Nathan.
Who are you? Where's Anna?
It's all right, sir. D.I. Chandler, this is D.S. Miles. Are you Nathan Mercer?
Yes. What's going on?
Please, take a seat.
Mars hunkers by a tank of scuttling beetles as Chandler and Nathan sit.
I want to ask you some questions.
About what?
These beetles. Where they come from?
I don't know.
What do you mean you don't know?
Well, you don't remember getting them?
No. I suffer from blackouts. I lose time, sometimes days. I don't remember anything.
Flashes of a blood-soaked kitchen.
It happens a lot.
Has anything else happened that you can't explain?
More gory flashes. A syringe is removed from a tub of green liquid.
There's this picture down in the shop. I hate it. I've tried a few times to throw it out, but when I black out, it reappears. Back on the wall. I know there's something wrong with me, with my head, but I've been too scared to find out what it is.
He's on his feet. Miles watches him dubiously. Chandler frowns at the floor.
You know. You know what I do when I black out, don't you?
We're looking into the murder of four girls whose bodies were found in the Thames.
Nathan smiles, disbelieving. He looks woozy as the world sways around him.
Four girls.
A flash of a girl in a pink dress dragged onto a kitchen table. Miles blocks Nathan as he makes for the door. Nathan gestures at the door, then nods, determined. Miles steps aside and Nathan hurries into his kitchen. He takes a cleaver out of a cupboard.
No idea why this is here.
Put that down. Put it down.
I loved those girls, and I never knew why they all disappeared. Tell me, what have I done?
You poisoned them, and then you disposed of the bodies.
No. No.
Nathan. Nathan, listen, you need help. These blackouts.
How can you help me? You can't bring the girls back.
Nathan Mercer, I'm arresting you on suspicion of murder.
You can't arrest me. I'm not Nathan.
Well, who are you then?
Max.
You're lying.
Max, wait!
Nathan puts a syringe to his own neck.
I need to know the names of the girls. If you help me, I can help Nathan.
You just want to send him to prison.
No! Nathan is very ill. He won't go to prison. He'll get help and treatment in hospital.
You can't help him. It's too late.
Tell me the girls' names. I need to know the names of the girls.
Nathan!
I have to know the girls' names! Nathan, tell me their names!
Nathan injects himself, foams at the mouth, and collapses.
Oh, he's gone.
Miles steps away and leans against the wall. Chandler straightens and stares down at Nathan's body with a grave frown. Outside the shop, Nathan's pale body is zipped into a body bag.
Well, whoever he was, we still need to identify the victims.
Inside the shop,
the answer has to be in here somewhere.
He spots a painting of a brunette woman.
Nathan wasn't allowed to get rid of the picture. It must have meant something. It's an illustration of a poem by Keats. Isabella took the head of her murdered lover, put it in a pot of basil and watered it with her own tears.
Jesus, does every romantic poem end in murder and death?
He never put their heads in the river. They meant too much.
He hurries outside and scans the pot plants around the entrance where forensics officers are at work.
Four pots of lilac.
Four victims.
Chandler grabs the cleaver from a forensics officer's hand. He shatters one of the pots with the cleaver. By night, the bodies of the dead girls are superimposed over the Thames River. ITFC audio description. Next time...
Here comes a bogeyman dressed in black.
Mantis is the most dangerous individual I've ever encountered. He's effectively untreatable.
Trust me.
You got no wife and kids, so you think it doesn't matter what happens to you. You don't care.
But you do.
I have to. He hasn't got anyone else.